Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg, and I'm predicting that Chris Jackson is going to say something now.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Thanks, Fred, seeing I'm sitting right here virtually with you as well.
That was deterministic. I could predict that 100%. That was certainty there. Well, not always.
Well, that amazingly crafted segue / introduction, we were actually talking about determinism versus probabilistic trains of thought. And the reason we're talking about it is because we received some commentary about one of my articles, which I've written on Ascendo. And one of the people who posted a comment was talking about how we need to move away from determinism and focus on probabilistic probabilistic train of thought or school of thought, perhaps. And it's hard to really ascertain what people are saying in a short, pithy comment, but I don't think it captures the entire intent of good reliability engineering.
Well, it was the analogy or part of that conversation was the mechanical electrical engineers do deterministic stuff. They do a circuit analysis. They do a material strength calculation for a particular load. They can calculate it out to the 16th digit, and it's pretty darn close to what it is, as opposed to time to failure information is probabilistic. Right. And I took exception to that because the mechanical engineer that does a good job understands that not every beam of a certain dimension has the same strength. It becomes probabilistic pretty darn quick. That's why we put a safety margin on it, things like that. And vice versa, I think you made the point that, you know, if you're looking at time to failure, yeah, it is like you use in your webinars a lot, the hand of randomness or random hand of failure or whatever.
That's the one. Yep.
Random hand of failure. But if we are working to prevent those failures from actually occurring, we're now in the deterministic world.
You can't just guess at what caused it. So, I'm hoping that there was just the way it came across was not entirely what our friend was suggesting, but literally he was suggesting that we have to stop thinking deterministically when we're talking about reliability and exclusively think about probabilistic stuff, which is not the case. So,
there are some folks that they're statisticians first, and so they're realm into reliability engineering is reliability statistics, and that's what they do. That's the toolbox they play in. Whereas I think you and I both think of it as reliability uses statistics. It's a way to describe this random hand event to describe variability and variations that are going to always exist. But on the other hand, we also talk about business processes where they could use this understanding of variability a bit more, or we're talking about design parameters or setting tolerances, or are we designing the right thing that will satisfy our customers? And because they're going to send it back if it's the wrong color, that's still a failure.
Right.
That's nothing to do with probability there, or it can if you get deep enough into it.
Or you misjudge your use case and all of a sudden, when you're anticipating customers to use your thing or users to use your thing in a particular way, they use it in a completely different way. I'm not talking about vandalism or abuse. It's just that you misjudged your market.
Oh, I saw a great meme yesterday. You just sparked that memory of this guy was in a convenience store, right? Mm-hmm. And he put his credit card in his mask, right? It is the age of COVID, right? So he puts his credit card in his mask and he goes up to pay for something and he pats his pocket and goes, "Oh, I forgot my wallet." So he did he looked at the heavens and then he grabbed the little card reader pay point system and put it up to his mask, and touched his forehead and put it on his mask. And the tapping feature of that credit card system enabled and it printed out the receipt.
Right.
And so the meme was that was the tester. And the store clerk was the developer. And the developer, you know, after the camera then catches this, the store clerk looking at it going, how'd this happen? Well, he just kind of prayed and got this to work. And so he's sitting on the floor with this PayPal, this pay system, you know, doing the gesture and looking to the heavens and hold, you know, putting it up to his face and his forehead, and he's not getting it to work. And he keeps trying to replicate this error of some sort. I thought it was so clever, but it separates, you know.
Yeah.
You got to have a little bit more information to know what was happening there.
Yeah. It's that none of that can be wrapped up in exclusive probabilistic thinking. And I mean, beyond that, I really hate people who try and oversimplify the world into one of two camps. You're either probabilistic or you're deterministic. You're either on the left of the aisle or the right of the aisle.
Or you're an optimist or a pessimist, or you're an introvert or you're an extrovert. Yeah, it's not that clean any ever.
No, it's not about. And again, all you're talking about is a school of thought. Why do we think about stuff? It's to solve problems, to answer questions, to make better decisions. So you need to have different approaches or different perspectives depending on, dare I say it, the decision you're trying to inform. And I'll give you an example where the worlds of determinism and probability collide. So, for example, we know pretty well how fatigue cracks grow and propagate over time. We know that pretty well. We've actually got lots of labs across the world today just putting lots of different bits of metal into the special jigs to, you know, cycle stresses to induce cracking and measure how long it takes. And then that improves our understanding of fatigue cracking. We know that every cycle of stress creates another plastic zone at the tip of a crack where stresses are concentrated, and the crack will just grow just that little bit every single cycle until your strut doesn't have enough strength left to overcome that stress. But that doesn't mean we know with absolute precision when a strut's going to fail due to fatigue. We might be able to use a deterministic or physics of failure model based on fatigue, but the inputs to that model are themselves probabilistic, such as the different dimensions of impurities or different characteristics of surface cracks, or perhaps variation in the cyclic loads that strut's going to experience. Imagine that strut's on a bridge. You can't know with absolute certainty the exact mass and speed of every vehicle going across that bridge. You have to characterize it using some sort of probabilistic representation. But you can combine that probabilistic summary with a deterministic theory on how things are going to fail. And you have, at the end of that, when you combine those two approaches, you have a really useful bit of information that you can go and make better decisions, that you can use, sorry, to make better decisions. And that information is not exclusively deterministic. It's not exclusively probabilistic. It uses both schools of thoughts or both perspectives to get as much information out of the world around you as you can.
So I'm going to take a step back and say, well, if I was just getting started in reliability engineering, I can pick a conference to go learn about material science and mechanical engineering of struts and load bearing structures and things like that in the Coughlin Manson equation and theory around metal fatigue, right? Which is what, 60 years old now or more? Mm-hmm. And even before that, it was known. I think he finally codified it. Those two gentlemen did. But the idea is I could go learn the deterministic stuff. Or I could pick another conference that has a whole bunch of, you know, reliability statistics type stuff and understanding variability and being able to do that. They're often not taught in the same school.
No.
And I'm wondering if that's part of the feedback is what's the best bang for the buck for a reliability professional to come in as the statistician, which nobody else wants to do anyway, I find in a lot of cases.
Yep.
Or come in as the material scientist, you know, in this strut type example.
You raise a very good point, actually. And I think we should flesh that out. And that is a lot of people are either good at one particular thing in life over other things, and if they become good, they tend to advocate that the thing I'm good at is absolutely essential for what you need to do in whatever walk of life you have.
Oh, I've seen that. I asked two engineers. One was a mechanical engineer. One was a mechanical engineer, and I asked them to help me solve this problem of, the soldering process had this. Component was an electronics component, but it would lift in this wave solder and it wouldn't solder correctly. And it was a mechanical problem because it wasn't aligned correctly, but it was an electrical component. So I asked both of them, what's your experience on this? So the electronics guy came up with this gee whiz electronics wizardry thing that would detect shifts to it and would adjust loads and do all of this stuff to it. The mechanical guy, he came out with a little high temperature sandbag, basically. So just put this on it.
There you go.
But it's exactly your point. You know, electrical engineers is not going to help design the structure of your home, but they are going to run the wiring. Whereas the carpenter can make the holes for the wiring, but isn't going to wire it up.
Correct. You can't. If the only tool you have is a hammer, then everything becomes a nail, and it just doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
I do think what our friend is sort of onto something, in that we have to think more probabilistically than we'd like to as technically minded people, as engineers. We always like having for a certain number of inputs the same output every single time. Actually,
yeah. It's
a very human thing, I would argue.
Mm-hmm.
But. Again, if you're not thinking deterministically, if you're not thinking about physics of failure, then you're not getting to the root cause of failures that have occurred or will likely occur. And if you're not doing that, how do you design those issues out of your product, system, or service? I suppose it comes down to the continuum. Are you interested in improving reliability or measuring reliability? Improving reliability means you don't technically have to measure how long it's going to take for your thing to fail. You just try and expose the design weak points or the manufacturing rub points, all those little things, and you say, well, get them out of our processes or design, which is different to measuring reliability, which is a lot more time intensive, a lot more resource intensive, very probabilistic. What are you trying to do? And reliability engineers, I find, are either too far one way or always at one end of that continuum and are allergic to change when it comes to the other end.
Yeah, well, part of it is, the difference between electrical and mechanical is that it's the background and schooling, and it's the way you've been taught to approach problems and the tools mm-hmm. that you have available, which form the way you think about solving problems. Maybe the thing for reliability engineers is go right down the middle of that. And pull from the toolboxes from either side, which provides a unique engineering solution. I have found that it many times is that I don't have any idea what the solution is, but I can talk to the electrical, mechanical, and marketing folks and get them all at the table at the same time and go, all right, here's the problem. What are we going to do? What are the ideas? And let's flesh this out and come up with a way to go solve this problem. Sometimes being the facilitator that can talk the different languages of the different disciplines is way more valuable, and then they say, well, we got to verify this solution. Let's do a reliability test. Okay. Finally, I get to do something, but don't discount the value of being able to pull together the right team, and independent of deterministic or probabilistic is, you're bringing a skill that allows us to think about it in all of those ways, all of the different disciplines, but also deterministic or probabilistic, and keeping those things at balance. And to me, that takes having knowledge in both areas, maybe not expertise in both areas, but having knowledge in both areas, you can talk coherently in them. Because as you said, Chris, is very few of our problems we face are uniquely one or the other. That's mm-hmm. a personal choice of how we apply the tools that we have available.
Well, I don't even know it's a personal choice. I think the specific decisions or scenarios demand a certain approach, demand a certain tool. And while you might be, yes, building that house, you might personally choose to use a hammer,
mm-hmm.
it's not really a choice if the right tool to use for the application is the hammer. You're making the correct choice. So right.
An air gun's a whole lot more fun than a hammer.
Well, but you're not going to use a circular saw to bang in a nail.
You haven't been on YouTube lately, have you?
Well, all right.
I get your point.
Work with me here, Fred. I agree. There's all sorts of lunatics on YouTube, but you need to, for a certain problem you're trying to solve, the tool that you need to solve that problem is usually the right tool. It's about you having, as a reliability engineer, the skill to work out what tool applies to this situation. Sometimes it's data analysis and probabilistic interpretation of stuff. Other times it's deterministic, where you say, you know what, this fatigue crack, it emanated at a very sharp corner on this strut here. Well, let's put a radius in here and see if we can remove that stress point. That's not probabilistic thinking. That's deterministic thinking, and it's reliability thinking at its best.
That's the key point, I think, Chris. And I think that the idea is bring the right tool set, right? Mm-hmm. Because if I was strictly probabilistic, I would say, let's just make this structure, even with the sharp point in it, let's just make it bigger, or let's use a different material or do other stuff so that our time to the one percentile failure takes longer.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Or I look at it and go, well, there's lots of variability in the materials. There's lots of variability in our process and how we weld this thing together and everything else. Let's reduce the variability of all those things. Right. Which may improve things to some degree. Right. Mm-hmm. Yet I'm just pushing out that tail a little bit. I'm shrinking that tail of time to the first failures. Yet I'm just using the wrong design. If I actually step back, like you're saying, is do the deterministic type approach to it, go, why is it failing right there? Which is a different question than when will it fail?
And conversely, you might have a product you're about to launch. You've got some accelerated testing done on its dominant failure mechanisms, and you want to know if it's good to go to meet your warranty period goals. You want to make sure that no more than 5% are going to fail in 3 years. How do you confirm that? Well, it's a probabilistic analysis if you've got that accelerated life testing data ready to go. And so a probabilistic approach is the right way to go. It depends on the question you're trying to answer.
I was trying to avoid that word. I've learned that usually upsets the deterministic people. Well, that depends.
That's right. And I'd like to think that when the time calls for it, I'll adopt the deterministic mindset and sometimes a probabilistic one. It's all about making the right call at the right time.
Independent of our talking earlier today about setting up a data analysis service. So
that's right. Well, that's a tool for certain applications, and it's not going to help you do material selection, for example, which is a better, which polymer has better abrasive characteristics for our challenging design environment. Well, that's just good design judgment 9 times out of 10.
Yep. So we'll see how it goes. Maybe we'll have to provide a design review service also, saying no sharp corners here where you get this stress concentration. You know,
absolutely.
It's amazing to me how many times I've walked into a situation and they go, you know, it might fail right there. And they all look at me like, how'd you know that? You just walked in here. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't know. And I'm not a mechanical engineer, but what you're doing right there doesn't look like very smart.
And that's sometimes a real benefit of a reliability engineer. Can just walk into a place that with a fresh set of eyes, where any one of those people who've been working fastidiously on that device for the last 3 years, had they been that person walking into the room, would have identified the same thing. But because they've been working on it incrementally since day one, meeting deadlines, budget pressures, working night and day, sometimes you tend to miss what's in front of you. And the deterministic thinking can go a long way in 5 minutes.
Yeah, certainly can. I should have charged them more too. But anyway, I think we're coming to a conclusion as you need a little bit of both. And apply the appropriate school of thought or approach to a problem as appropriate. And that's the bottom line. And as much as I loathe saying it, it depends.
It does depend.
It does depend. All right. So anyway, I figured the short exchange we had on LinkedIn had just for a much larger conversation. So I'm glad we had a chance to get that going. Mm-hmm. So with that, Chris, I think we'll clock out at right about 20 minutes. This is my little timer here just rolled over to that. If you're listening to this and you have strong preferences of which approach reliability engineers should take, whether it's deterministic or probabilistic or any of these dichotomies that are out there, let us know. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR and leave a comment, join the conversation there. Or you can find Chris or I or the other hosts of the show on LinkedIn and or on our about pages on Ascendo. It's these little questions or comments and things like that that we get from people that listen to the show or participate with our content that gives us an idea for, what's on your mind. And that's why I almost always end these episodes with asking you for your input. So, and besides, it's good to know that somebody actually is still wanting to learn something and helps us think through things and helps us learn too. So we look forward to hearing from you. So with that, Chris, let's get on with the rest of our day. We've got, I'm sure you've got a full calendar one sort or another, and then we'll move on.
Probably.
Oh, just look at your calendar.
Yeah.
Ask your wife if you're in doubt what you need to do today.
Yeah, she's good at fixing my doubt.
There you go. All right. We'll talk to you later, Chris.
Cheers, Fred. See ya.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.